When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich lad.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I am Rachel Ann Harding, and I have some stories for you. This is May Madness, where I bring you a new story and storyteller every day of the week, because I'm obsessed with stories, and I can't wait to share more with you. The fairy tale sponsor for this episode is Sam Snow and Will White's Glass Coffins. So the princess you were protecting is dead. Well, mostly dead. She's in the queue for True Love's Kiss. But good glass coffins are not easy to find. Unexpected hailstorms cause holes, and then the bugs move in, and soon your princess has rat nests in her hair and mold on her dress. All of Sam Snow and Will White's glass coffins have unbreakable glass. Special packages include UV protection, tinted glass, and scratch-resistant coatings. Sam Snow and Will White's glass coffins. Unbreakable endings until true love's kiss. This episode is also brought to you by the Patreon supporter Colleen Jane. Colleen is a storyteller, experienced driver on mountain roads, and a patron of the arts. A big thank you to her and all the other patrons. If you would like to become a supporter of the podcast for as little as $4 a month, you can find links on storystorypodcast.com and hear me read your name and thank your beautiful face for the world to hear. If becoming a supporter isn't in the cards right now, then help the podcast grow by sending this along to a friend. Your friend will appreciate a bedtime story, and I will appreciate you sharing the podcast with another pair of ears. The theme for this week is mothers. Milbury Birch has graced the podcast many times with her wonderful work. She is an award-winning, internationally known performer and recording artist, and this is her telling the story, Grizel.
In old Paris, not far from a great cathedral, lived a lace maker whose name was Grizel. When she was young, Grizel had been very beautiful, and many men had courted her. There had been a barrel maker, a cheese merchant, a burly blacksmith, a shy scholar. Once the baron himself, when he came to worship at the cathedral, had thrown her a rose and asked her name. But Grizel had married none of them. She chose instead a poor laughing soldier named Beau, who wore a bright red plume like a flame in his hat. Alas, before they'd been married a week, Beau and all his regiment were marched off to war. Grizel never saw or heard from him again. The years went by, and Grizel was neither widow nor wife, yet she did not despair. It was not in her nature to do so. Instead, she devoted herself to all the little creatures who lived in the shadow of the cathedral, feeding them from her own meager stores. They became her children. Every day, rain or sun, wind or calm, Grizel would walk by the cathedral and cross the bridge to market. There, she would purchase a loaf of bread and fill her pitcher with fresh milk. Half the loaf and half the milk she kept to herself, but the rest she always gave away, crumbling the bread into tiny bits for the birds and pouring the milk into little bowls, which she set down in the bushes for the cats who lived nearby. All the birds and cats loved Grizel as if she were their mother. They counted on her coming, through rain or sun, through wind or calm. One thrush especially loved her and left the woods at the edge of Paris to sing each evening at her window. And there was an orange tomcat she called Monsieur, who occasionally came into her house to curl up by the hearth and purr as loudly as a man snores. It was company, of a sort. Year after year, Grizel made her living working miracles of lace, and year after year, she gave away half her food. She was, in her way, quite content. And then one day, the stone angels on the cathedral wall noticed her. They commented about her in that strange, soft whisper that only stone angels use, and which passers-by mistake for the cooing of doves. "See," said one, "here she comes again." "She never forgets," said a second. "She never will," added a third. They sang Grizel's praises until their voices reached the stone gargoyles, who squatted precariously on the edges and ledges of the cathedral, spitting out water after every rain. Now, if there is one thing gargoyles cannot stand, having been made in the ugly image of the devil himself, it is the look and smell of a good woman. They hate hearing of it, even more than they hate hearing of a good man. Indeed, to hear such a woman praised hurt their ears. So they began to complain together, in that strange hard grumbling that only stone gargoyles use, and which passers-by mistake for the rumbling of carts.
"She is not as good as she seems," said one.
"No one is," said a second.
"We must test her," added a third, scratching himself in unpleasant places, the sound of which was remarkably like chalk scraping on slate.
So late that night, when all of Paris slept beneath them, the gargoyles sent one of their own to speak with the angels to propose a wager, and because it was Christmas Eve, the angels agreed to listen.
"Anyone," the gargoyle messenger said, his ugly face screwed up into a most disagreeable and permanent sneer. "Anyone can be good when it comes to the feeding of cats and birds. But we mean to test this good Grizel with something far more difficult."
The stone angels, whose faces were fixed in permanent holy smiles, inclined their heads slowly to one side, meaning they were willing to listen further. It was, after all, Christmas Eve, and as angels, they had been made to be charitable.
"We want to test her with an ugly and unlovable child," the gargoyle said. "Even good mothers come to grief over such."
"She is too old for a child," pointed out the chief angel, looking down her long nose at the gargoyle and wrinkling it slightly as if she had just smelled something horrible. And surely if stone could smell bad, the gargoyle would have. "Besides," the stone angel continued, "her husband is many years gone. She cannot have a child." The gargoyle almost smiled, which improved neither his disposition nor his looks.
"We will supply the child," he said in his grumble of a voice, "if you promise not to aid Grizel in any way."
The angels all nodded their stone heads at that, because they knew interference in such matters could only come from instructions from on high. And the sound of their heads nodding was like the sound of red plumes waving in the breeze. Down below in her narrow bed, Grizel dreamed of her young husband and how he had looked going off to war. It was a dream that was both happy and sad, and she laughed and wept in her sleep, but did not awaken.
"Agreed," cooed the angels, sure of their own success. "And," the gargoyle added, knowing that once an angel has agreed to a wager, it is impossible for her to back out of the rest. "If we are correct, and Grizel is not really good, one of you shall join us squatting on a ledge of the cathedral, spitting out rainwater and cursing God's name for 100 years.
There was a great flutter of consternation among the angels, and the sound of it caused the bells to tremble in the steeple. But remembering Grizel's goodness, all the angels at last agreed. "However," the chief angel said smugly, knowing that gargoyles, too, must keep to a bargain, "if we are correct, and she is as good as we say, then one of you shall have to stand upright with us, back straight, singing hosannas to the heavens, for 100 years. For a moment, the gargoyle looked concerned. His face cracked in several places, causing slivers of stone to rain down on the street below.
But remembering at last the imperfection of mankind, he grinned his agreement, and the bargain was struck. And so that very night, a strange shape was flung down from the top of the cathedral, twisting and turning as it fell. It landed right by Grizel's door with a horrible thud that scattered birds from their nests and forced Monsieur from his cozy place by the fire, though the cold was bone-chilling outside. Only Grizel did not awaken at the sound. Indeed, she would have slept the whole night through, dreaming of her young husband Beau, if the creature at her door had not begun to cry. It was a pitiful wail, part sob, part laugh, and it went on and on and on, shattering the Christmas peace of Paris. Grizel arose, holding her old dressing gown closed with one hand. When she opened the door, there in front of her was the ugliest child she had ever seen. He was so ugly, his eyes crossed and his nose and chin threatened to meet in the middle. His ears stuck out of corn-colored hair like two horns. His teeth were nearly black. Grizel shuddered. For a moment she thought he was an imp of Satan, and surely that was not a sight for Christmas Day. But when the ugly child cried again, part sob and part laugh, she held the door open further, motioning him in, for she knew the devil did not know how to weep. The ugly child did not move. Indeed, it was as if his feet were rooted to the ground. But he held up his hands.
"Mama!"
he cried in a voice as cracked as old leather. "Poor little thing," Grizel said. She bent down and picked him up, wrinkling her nose slightly at his smell, for he was as ripe as a dish of milk left out too long in the sun. When she straightened with the child in her arms, he was as heavy as a sin, but still she smiled at him. When the stone angels saw this, they too smiled. One even began humming a benison, until the nearest gargoyle called out,
"Hush, tush, you may not help,"
in a voice like a cartwheel needing to be oiled. The angel stopped singing. The ugly little child grabbed a hank of Grizel's hair and pulled hard. Grizel gave a scream. When they heard that, the gargoyles sneered. One even started to chortle, until the nearest angel called out, "Hush, tush, you may not help," in a voice like that of an early lark. The gargoyle stopped laughing. Grizel cocked her head for a moment, as if she had heard both the song and the laughter. Then she shrugged. After all, Paris is always full of noise. And carrying the ugly little boy hard against her breast, she went into the house and closed the door. Through winter and spring and the hot Paris summer, through rain and sun and wind and calm, Grizel took care of the ugly little boy. She combed his corn-colored hair and wiped his crooked nose and made him clothes out of her own, a white linen shirt from her petticoat, a pair of blue pants from her cloak, and a vest made from her wedding gown, covered with shiny buttons and little pearls. His clothes were handsome, though his face was not, and she called him Beau, after her lost husband, thinking he might grow into the name. When Beau yanked the cat's tail and stole eggs from the thrush's nest, she cautioned him, saying, "A gentle hand is best." When he overturned the barrel maker's barrels and threw about the cheesemaker's wares, she chided, "Do to others as you would be done by." And when he took coins from the poor box in the cathedral, she made him put them back double. "For others," she reminded him, "are not so fortunate as we." And if the barrel maker and the cheesemaker, the thrush and the cat, the neighbors for blocks around, and even the baron himself called the ugly little boy Gargoyle, cursing his name, Grizel did not, for she had learned to love him. And when she tucked him into her bed at night, kissing his ugly little face on both cheeks and brow, she thought, "He is company. Am I not lucky to have such?" So most of the year passed, with little Beau playing one rascally trick after another. but nothing he did made Grizel love him any less. Up on their ledges, the stone gargoyles grew worried. There was nothing they hated more than losing a wager, and a Christmas wager at that. They grumbled continuously through the fall months, sounding like thunder. All the good folk who lived near the cathedral gazed skyward day after day, expecting rain. The angels, though, looked smugly complacent, and it was their very smugness that almost proved Grizel's undoing, for they were not listening when the gargoyles prayed to their own dark gods for extra aid 2 nights before Christmas. The angels, it may be remembered, had agreed not to interfere in any way, but the gargoyles, having been bred in deceit, had made no such promise. And so that very night, down the street, marched a handsome soldier, his red plume a bit bedraggled, but still waving in the wind. If his face was the color of stone, it was hidden by the dark. If his ears were spiked like horns, they were covered by his hat. And if his smile went only to the teeth and not the eyes, well, that might have been a trick of the moonlight. He knocked on Grizel's door. Cautiously, she opened the door and peered out. Visitors rarely came in the evening, never at night. When she saw the soldier framed in the doorway, she thought she must be asleep and dreaming. But when he took her hand in his, she knew she was awake. "I am home, wife," he said, stepping inside. His smile seemed more glorious than she remembered. She ran to get him wine and cake, stopping in front of the glass to comb her hair. Her eyes filled with tears, seeing how age had taken her, while he was still so handsome, so dashing, so young. If she wondered at it, she assumed travel had treated him well. When she came back into the room, he was standing over the bed, where little Beau lay asleep, thumb in his mouth against the black teeth. "That bed is mine," the soldier said. "Remove him." Grizel did not say a word, but picked up the sleeping child and gently set him wrapped in a blanket onto the hearth where he slept until morn. At breakfast, when Grizel went to feed little Beau, the soldier complained, "I will not have a child eat what is rightfully mine. Give me his food." Grizel almost spoke out then, but glancing at the soldier's handsome face, she kept still, taking the food from little Beau's plate and handing it to the man. But secretly, while he was eating it all, she took food from her own meager plate and gave it to the child. By evening, when the boy had overturned the barrel maker's shop once again and pulled Monsieur's tail and even plucked the barbs one at a time from the soldier's feathery plume, and that was odd indeed, for each barb dripped blood, the man could stand no more. While Grizel watched in horror, he picked up the boy and threw him roughly over his knee. Then, raising his hand, he prepared to beat the child. Grizel rushed over to them and thrust her own hand between his and the boy, taking the blow for herself. Then she pulled little Beau to her, crying out, "You are not my husband. He was a gentleman for all that he went to war. You may have a plume like a flame in your hat, but there is no flame in your heart. The boy is full of mischief, yet still he is the gentler soul." She covered the boy's head with kisses. "Go away and leave me with my son." And even though it was Christmas Eve, and even though it broke her heart, she pushed the soldier out the door. There was little enough for the evening meal, for the soldier had already eaten most of it, but they made the best of what was there. And when it was time for midnight mass at the cathedral, little Beau slipped his hand into Grizel's. As they walked along, he smiled up at her. When they went through the great cathedral doors, the stone angels inclined their heads downward, whispering to one another like doves cooing, "Such a good woman! Such an ugly child!" This time, Grizel heard their words and looked up at them. "Hush! Tush!" she said. "If a handsome man can be transformed by hate, surely an ugly little boy can be changed by love." She patted Beau on his corn-colored hair. "Can't you see He has grown into his name.
Then she whispered into Bo's ear, Pay them no mind. They are only stone after all. Many years later, old Grizel died in her sleep and went straight to heaven. That same night, her ugly son disappeared as well.
But if you look carefully at the angels carved into the facing on the cathedral wall, you will see that not all of them are handsome. There is one with slightly crossed eyes and with teeth almost black, but he is the only one with an absolutely angelic smile.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Show the love. Find Milbury Birch on the internet. Tell her you heard her on the podcast and now want to hear her tell more stories. You can find me and the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Story Story Podcast or Rachel Ann Harding. The idea for today's fairy tale sponsor came from the beautiful brain of Rob Vanderwilt. Check out the ads for the fairy tale sponsors on social media. Let me know the favorite stories you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. Who knows? Maybe you'll hear them here soon. Like and rate the show on iTunes. Head over to the website and join the mailing list for hidden goodies. And if you tune in, you'll hear more stories tomorrow. But until then, live happily ever after.
Mary Kate opened up the door, and there, on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the festive music from the royal court.